Discount code Canyon.
Remember, if anyone asks, we're a nice, normal talk show. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go. We're burning daylight.
About that is actually my son said that like about a month ago. Slap some bacon on a biscuit, let's go. And I was laughing so hard. He must have listened to the show one of the days I played that. And I think that's a great John Wayne clip. All right, welcome back. Kate Daly Show here, katedalyradio.com. Happy to have you listening in. And what a great hour that was, talking about how we can kind of preserve those things of history to send down to our kids and how much they mean to them, to touch it and feel it and actually kind of be a part of that. I thought that was really cool. I welcome Susan Reeve. How are you?
Hello, good, great.
And that was neat. Because I think, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about politics of the day. And as rough as that can be sometimes, I think talking about those important things, too, are such great reminders on the show about what we need to remember. And some of the greatest stories I've heard are those stories of history. And I think we'll share one of those with you, right, Susan?
We will. And
let's do that.
Yeah. And I appreciate Melissa going over that, because we lived back east in Virginia and we got to see some of those battle reenactments. Mm-hmm. And people looked like the authentic Stonewall Jackson, looked just like Stonewall Jackson on a horse. It was astonishing, shocking see how cool that was. So
it
you
is
ever
neat
have a chance
being there, because yes. I have, and it is neat being there. It is different. It's like a reverence. It's like a
sacred spot. Yes. You can feel the souls. And
it's like Pearl Harbor. Until you go there and you actually feel that, it's hard to describe, right?
It is. The number of souls lost and what we owe to them for being there and doing what they did, who knows how history would have turned out had they not mm-hmm. put up the fight for noble purposes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it was important to go to reenactments until I went. And then I thought, this is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I would love to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, let's tell us, I wanted, before we get into the stuff of current, the current day, let's go back a little bit. Yeah. Let's talk about this.
There is a fascinating story about a spy who is actually a Spanish spy, and his name was Garbo, but he spied for the Allies. And his story is really a very strange story in that he is pretty much responsible for the success that we had on Normandy, that landing with 160,000 men, mm-hmm. that the Nazis never really put up the defense they should have. Mm-hmm. And people are kind of surprised because they held back some of their best troops and their best tanks in other places. They thought that it was going to be at a different spot, but they were sure of it. Mm-hmm. Why were they so sure? It's because of this one man, and his code name was Garbo. And now the name Garbo is from Greta Garbo, who was considered the most famous actress in American cinema at the time. But she also played a spy called Mata Hari. And mm-hmm. She was famous for that role as a spy. And this man started out as a Spanish national, and he actually went to the Germans, to the Allies, and said, you know, I would like to help out with the war, and I oppose the Germans, and can I help you? And they go, well, what experience do you have? And he said, none. And he said, but I can do good stuff. And they're like, go away, please.
Right.
And he tried a couple more times. Finally, he went to the Germans. He came up with this idea. If I go to the Germans and I do a good job for them, I can go back to the English and say, look at the good job I'm doing, and then be a double spy. So that was his intent all along, was to defeat Hitler. And so he infiltrated Nazi intelligence at the highest level, because what he did is he went back to the Germans and he said, okay, this is the German embassy in Madrid. He's like, I know all these people. I have all these contacts in England. And they're like, what do you mean you have contacts? And he said, oh, I know people. There's merchant sailors. I've got all these contacts. And they're like, really? And so he just started describing them. He was making them all up.
What?
He was creating a cast of characters of 22 and at times 27 agents. Uh-huh. And he just said, yes, and this is what they see. And these were people who were on merchant ships in India, headed to India, headed to Canada, headed to Ceylon. They were fascists. Some of them were communists, sailors, fishermen. And they just said, well, he can't be making this up, but he was making it all up.
Wow.
And during the process, he would, if, say, they expected a big deployment from England, and he knew the Nazis would expect information that was similar to what was happening, he would just kill off his imaginary spy and say, oh, he had to go in for surgery. Oh, he didn't survive the surgery. Oh, now his wife works on the inside of the Enigma cipher. So he is actually one of the people who helped hack the Enigma cipher.
Hmm.
So do you know what the Enigma cipher is? Mm-hmm. It was the cipher machine that
right.
they used that was supposed to be unbreakable.
Sure.
And they really did slave over that a lot. Well, he would write these enormous dispatches that were supposed to be to German intelligence, and then his handler at MI5 would send them out, and everybody knew on the Allies side, oh, this is coming from the English, and this is this pretend guy. So they were able to crack the code of the Enigma machine because they knew the text of what was going out. They could decipher all the other communiques that the Germans were using for that day
mm-hmm.
using the Enigma machine because they changed it every
right,
day.
Right.
It was based on this guy. And so they kept a script of he wrote out 312 dispatches, and the average length was 2,000 words. These were huge
wow.
dispatches. They kept track of them on these index cards, what each person was doing. If there was a piece of information with one person, they would verify it through another person who was also fake, 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 fake. And then he said to his Nazi people,
uh-huh.
hey, look at this big spy ring I've got going for you. I need money to pay them. And so the Nazis were thrilled to hand over all this money. And because he was living in London,
mm-hmm.
They had to figure out, well, how do we get him cash? And it was through this like fruit vegetable contact in Madrid and had an, you know, some other person in,
right.
in England anyway. So it was all him. And they said in the final total that he was mostly responsible for the funding of British intelligence during World War II, that they were using Nazi funds
Jeez.
For fake assets to support British intelligence. That's what paid for their information.
What
and
a
they
story.
It was so amazing and
so creative.
Yes, so creative. And his name was Juan Garcia, Juan Pujol Garcia,
mm-hmm.
a Spanish national, and codenamed Garbo. But he had to start out, he was in jail because he didn't want to fight in the Spanish Civil War. And
mm-hmm.
he, you know, used all these false aliases to get out. And then he needed to get passports in order to pull off this whole thing. And people thought, well, why was he doing this? And he said, essentially, it's because I don't want to live under that. I don't want to live under fascism. I don't mm-hmm. want to live under Hitler. And so... but listen to this. In 1942, a major in the German intelligence said, your activity and that of your information gave us a perfect idea of what is taking place over there. These reports, as you can imagine, have an incalculable value. And for that reason, I beg of you to proceed with the greatest care so as not to endanger yourself in these momentous times, either yourself or your organization.
Mm-hmm.
He was working with the British the whole time with these fake people. And so they called it the double cross system.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he wrote 315 letters. And the Daily Mail. So Nigel West is an espionage. He's a modern day espionage expert. And he's a co-author of Garbo's biography. And he said Garbo played a significant role in that, because if you have the cipher machine and you
mm-hmm.
don't know the unencrypted message at one end, then the cipher message at the other will be gobbledygook. But if, on the other hand, you already know the content of the original message, you can reverse engineer it. It was as high tech as it got
right, at that time.
And he cracked that. So completely astonishing. He was awarded medals from both the German government, their highest honor, and from the British Empire, its highest honor.
Oh, my gosh.
And it says he's probably the only person in history who ever got both.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So the role he played in D-Day is he got them completely convinced that the Allies were going to land at Calais, which was the shortest point between England and France.
Right.
And he was absolutely got them convinced. And there was a whole fake army in the southern part of England. And there were like inflatable tanks and fake munitions. And the king came down and did a fake tour of this fake army. And they said, Patton, General Patton is leading it. And so he was down there. And
wow,
in reality, it was completely fake. And so he was able to help perpetuate this. Garbo also kept up the ruse and said that to the Germans. And so it goes on and on that he just did this incredible thing. And they say for the fact that after 3 days, the Germans were still waiting with their majority of armaments and things further up the coast. And they just thought for sure that he was going to be landing at that spot. So he was given permission by Eisenhower to send off a message on D-Day saying that it was happening. And illogically, the station in Madrid that he had always reported to went off the air from 11:30 p.m. until 7 a.m. And he was allowed to put this out at 3 a.m. So afterwards, he says to the Germans, I cannot accept excuses or negligence. Were it not for my ideals, I would abandon the work, still acting as the spy.
Jeez.
But he was allowed to tell them. Otherwise, he would have lost their confidence.
Sure, sure.
So anyway, he saved untold lives, that 160,000 people over a series of days. And even after 2 months, because Hitler had seen the original communiques that this was definitely happening at Calais and a second attack up at in Norway, that Hitler believed it. And so he thought if we move these,
right,
we're going to fall for it.
It's amazing.
And lo and behold, this
it's
guy.
Amazing that so much of it was fake, too.
Well, and that nobody knew what had happened to him. So it said he left and went to Angola. Nobody could find him. But after 40 years, they found him living in Venezuela.
I have no doubt. elude people.
And he came back for D-Day activities.
Okay,
and people were astonished.
I'll bet.
Yes, he resurfaces
out from Venezuela, really. Interesting. Be right back. Thanks, Susan. Be right back on The Kate Daly Show. Don't go anywhere.
Listen to 14.
East, there's a stranger.
Show here, katedalyradio.com. Oh, listen to all over the globe. I thank you for that and share the podcast far and wide. I hope you will. It's interesting how shows sort of, I don't know, I can't explain what it's like doing this show every day, but it's kind of interesting how the shows kind of gear themselves to themes and to certain things that we end up talking about. And a lot of times it's a surprise to me even what we end up talking about and how thematic it truly is. And taking a walk in history today, there's going to be some other things that we chat about in this hour that are very, very current. But I do think that the most important part of history are often the stories that aren't talked about or told, and that we're missing something if we don't have a love for history. We miss the stories that aren't explored, that aren't talked about. And I love the story that you brought to the table today of that spy, because it's unique and different and interesting part of history that we need to know about. And also, this is kind of the anniversary of a couple of things. Also, Tiananmen Square, it's the
30th anniversary
of that yesterday. And I think, you know, for us, do you remember seeing a big piece on that? Here it is, the 30th, right? You would probably see something. You saw something on blogs and maybe news organizations that cater to pieces being written that want to remind us of this, that talk about liberty or freedom, but not necessarily your front page news organization. And it was interesting to me that today they even had a huge piece on people fear fake news more than they do terror. And I thought that that was actually really good news, because I think people are starting to realize how much fake news there is and how much we're drawn to the stories not talked about or told, or we're drawn to history they don't want us talking about or exploring. And that it's actually superseded now the fear of terror, which they've tried to make a thing, right, in this last 30, 40 years, that has been something that has been very much in the public, out in front in the public, is that. So I think that that's actually really important to know. And Tiananmen Square, for some reason, whenever I think of Tiananmen Square, I'm kind of guilty of putting it a little bit farther back in history than it actually is. And I don't know why I do that. Maybe you do it too. But it always seems to me those still shots of the man standing in front of the tanks always resonates with me. But I always tend to think, for some reason, the shots that were a little bit grainier, and I think of them in the 60s or 70s rather than in 1989. But this was on mainland China. Tiananmen Square protest, and there was a student-led demonstration held in Tiananmen Square in Beijing during 1989. And so this movement was inspired by the Beijing protests. It's called the 89 Democracy Movement, right? And the protests started April 15th and then were forcibly suppressed on June 4th, which anniversary would have been yesterday. So when the government declared martial law and sent the military to occupy central parts of Beijing, and it became known as the Tiananmen Square Massacre. Troops with assault rifles and tanks fired at demonstrators and those trying to block the military's advance into Tiananmen Square. And so estimates of the death toll, several hundreds to up to 2,600, thousands more wounded. And still a name to this day was that gentleman who stood in front of the tanks. Can you imagine the courage that would have taken? I'm sure he was executed right after this, or tortured, or whatever they did to him. Nobody, his identity still unknown, right, to this day. I'm pretty sure it hasn't ever been hasn't ever surfaced. But what a story! And when you look at where China, the paradigm in which China exists, and you look at us. And you see us trotting down that road, and you see a guy standing in front of the tanks as the protesters were out there and how they wanted to silence those protesters. You know, there's a couple different kinds of protesters. There's the kind that protests for liberty and freedom, and then there's the kind that protests that are bought and paid for.
Agitators
like Black Lives Matter. It's a really disgraceful group that that seek to be violent to agitate for the progressive left movements. And so when I see people protesting against government in this way, did they need to be heard? Yes. Do they get to a point in history when we're looking at this section of history over in China? China has sought to erase this. China doesn't want to talk about this. And they want to erase it from their history, just like the Turks want to erase the murder of all of those Assyrian Christians. And even on that note, do you remember that it took 100 years for Hollywood to finally actually make that film? It was like 90 years. They kept wanting to make the film about the Assyrian Christians, and they didn't do it till a couple of years ago because they kept threatening that they would pull money out from under the movie companies if they made it. They actually wanted to star Clark Gable, and they didn't allow it.
Wow.
And people had signed on all along the way and were not allowed to produce that film because they did not want that piece of history told about marching them in the desert, starving and killing them off by torturing them. And so this reminds me of that in the way that China would love to erase this story and not have it talked about at all. And I do think, as you looked at the news cycle yesterday, I didn't find anything on mainstream regarding this.
Yeah,
I didn't find anything. And I know that Biden is buddy-buddy with China. I know that his kid is buddy-buddy with China. I know that once they left, his kid had money sent to his account here in America.
$1.5 billion to his company, Hunter Biden.
From China.
Yeah.
And we worry, and people are worried about so-called Russian collusion. Are you kidding? And how bought and sold are we? And how intertwined are we with China? You know, I talked to the, I think it was last week in radio, it's kind of blurry what day it was, but I talked last week about how they're buying up. They own the biggest pig farms in America, the Chinese. They own 30 million acres of farmland here, and how intertwined we really are. And how much our elected officials trot over there for this or that. Their kids come here for school, the leaders in China. We have such a relationship with China. And then they're guilty of something like this, and yet it's not talked about on mainstream. Is there any wonder why? I mean, our mainstream is so bought and sold and so told what to report on and what not to report on that they don't want this clouding any type of relationship with them, just like the Turks didn't want it with the Syrian Christians. And I've had people on the show talking about that very issue because a lot of people won't touch it. I think these are stories that need to be told. But what I loved about this gentleman, and I hope that we can become more like this gentleman that stood in the front of those tanks and how much courage that took because he knew his life was in his hands. It only takes a single act of courage from one free-thinking individual to create a ripple that becomes a tidal wave.
Absolutely. Well, and even the person who took the picture of that man, actually Frontline through PBS had a story why photos of Tiananmen Square's tank man were hidden in a hotel toilet. So after Charlie Cole, who was the photojournalist, was in Beijing and took that photo, then he knew what an explosive photo it was. So he took his film out of the camera and hid it in the back of the toilet, inside the toilet. And the next day, the Chinese security came and confiscated all his film and took film from the previous night.
Wow.
But he went back and found that film was still there in the toilet. He said, luckily, no one had flushed the toilet. That's why that picture exists.
Because they would actually like people to not know this existed at all.
Yes.
That this massacre existed.
Right.
Hi, caller. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Sure. What I find really, really fascinating about China right now is what they're doing throughout the world, buying friends. But I have to wonder where's the money coming from, because they have manipulated their currency so much and they don't tell the truth about their economy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But something is going on with their economy. They've got a growing... Their population is getting really old.
Mm-hmm.
People are dying like crazy.
Yeah.
They're putting Christians and Muslims into concentration camps. Something isn't right there. And if we could find out the truth, we know they're vulnerable.
Right.
And we could really ruin their plans for them if we could just figure out what exactly is going on in China with their economy.
Right.
Because we know it's not good. We just don't know what that means.
Great. Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you. There is a lot of speculation about what the very thing she was talking about. They're older, getting older. They're what's going on with their population. Also, what's going on with the earners in their population, too. So the currency being manipulated? Sure. And when I look back at that group of people, they were wanting a freer world. They knew the oppression that existed, obviously, and there was a massacre that took place that they do not want talked about here in America. They don't want it talked about there. And like you said, I mean, it's only really by the grace of God that that picture came out.
Oh,
that showed
complete miracle
him in front of the tank.
Yeah,
tanks. And they only showed a portion of the tanks. Can you imagine what it really looked like with all the firepower they had?
And they just machine gunned people in the crowd. And
right.
So they had set up blocks away and people, as they walked past them outside of Tiananmen Square, were surrounding them and trying to talk to the drivers, saying, you know, don't do this, don't do this. But then they went on and they just mowed down the crowd. And so it is, it's interesting she mentioned what's going on with their economy, because in 1989, when that happened, the GDP was $348 billion. But according to the CIA now, it's in 2017, it's $23 trillion, surpassing the United States and making it the world's largest economy, which is that right? How can that be right? But they have exercised so much espionage against us and hacked into so much of our technology. They say in the last 10 years, it's $300 billion a year of theft of our and profits.
Isn't that amazing?
And so over 10 years, that's, you know, massive amounts of money.
When I think about those contracts, when the people take their farmland and they give it to the Conservation Act, and at the end of the contract with the government, it says that you're giving your land, and this is courtesy of Melissa, by the way, co-host Melissa, you're giving your land to the United States and its successor. I always think of China because I don't think we realize, you know, it's always what's not talked about. It's the look over here while you're looking over here. And who's never talked about in as in the enemy, as in the country we need to really keep our eye on? It's China. But where are our eyes? Russia, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
Russia. I mean, all of these things that I don't think actually merit that. By the way, it was Tolstoy. I didn't note that, that said it only takes a single act of courage from one free-thinking individual to create a ripple that becomes a tidal wave, that will become a tidal wave. And I really want to give that its justice, because what is being said there is one of the most important sentences we could probably ever say on this show, is you as an individual can create a tidal wave, but we don't realize our power in that. We don't realize what one person can do to flip that and to make us think and make us want to react and act out and be one of those that stands for even our country right now. How important that statement is and will become to us as we prod along on the little road from socialism to communism right now. Really and truly, we have to keep that. Remembering that. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show. More with Susan when we come back.
Final curtain, my friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this, I did it my way.
Hi there, welcome back, Kate Daly Show. Can't believe this show just boogied along, man. I can't believe how quick this went today. Welcome back, and diving a little bit into history to talk about those important anniversaries of things that are not talked about. Tiananmen Square and a lot of our history of the wars, you know, Civil War and World War One and Two, and of course just really talking about these things that need to be talked about, remembered, and understood. I think it's very important. I have Susan with me, and jumping into today's news cycle. And also, I wanted to mention, because one of the big headline stories was people fear fake news. When I said that, and not terror as much anymore, terror. When I say that, when I say that's good news, I'm not referring to those that think mainstream is real, that everyone else is fake, and that mainstream somehow will safeguard them against the fake news. The news that they regard as the fake news is actually the real news, and the news in mainstream is actually fake, which. If people really get that and they understand that, then it's a good thing. If not, if people are clamoring to the mainstream news for truth, then we have a bigger severe problem, because then people are then discounting what real news is in favor of mainstream. That's an issue. That is not good news. So I wanted to clarify that, because there really is a clarification on how you view and what you view as propaganda in this country. And there is just a boatload of propaganda going on coming out of mainstream. And I know you know that. We talk about it all the time on the show, but it just needed to be said. There's a couple of things that are changing, and I wanted to make note of that. YouTube now is censoring hateful videos, anything they find hateful, whatever that is. Don't you just love your free speech being taken care of by these people? YouTube was started with seed money from different arms of the CIA, along with, well, Google, along with Facebook, along with Twitter, along with all of these things. And so just know that the people behind that aren't necessarily some private business. I mean, you can choose whether or not to put up a YouTube video. That's fine. You can choose not to use YouTube. So I still like that we can play that card. But at the end of the day, who's running YouTube? And there's a reason it's the biggest one. So I just wanted to make that note. Facebook facing trials in Poland over censorship. We have CNN numbers still dwindling. I went back in the Wayback Machine, and over the last 5 years, every headline about CNN is numbers dwindling. It's been dwindling for 5 years. They can barely scrape together 500,000 people in our entire country that will watch their news network. So why it's played at every airport and auto repair store at all these different places, I don't even know. But it only stays on the air because it's funded, it's bought, it's paid for, and it delivers the narrative, the very, very idiotic, moronic narrative that it delivers. And so I just wanted to let you know that they've been dwindling for a long time, still dwindling. There's a couple of new, like, should we say, speaks of the day, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This
Susan.
Is along George Orwell's 1984 with the new speak.
You know, can I just say 1984 needs to be moved from the nonfiction, you know, from the fiction to the nonfiction section of the library now. Can we just please make that move?
Yes.
Because we're there.
We are living it. In fact, yeah. George Orwell, who wrote that, said, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. Mm-hmm. So just the ability to say it.
Right.
But what's new in the news now is that the New York Times decided to play this card. The New York Times is now calling the fetal heartbeat, because we're having all these fetal heartbeat anti-abortion bills mm-hmm. around the country, pro-life. They're now calling it embryonic pulsing.
Did you know that you're pulsing? I didn't know I was pulsing. Is a heartbeat now pulsing?
Maybe they should have said throbbing or something.
Oh my
embryonic
gosh.
Throbbing pulsing. In a report on Louisiana's new abortion ban last week. And so this is playing to the abortion advocates. And so similar bills all around the country use the term fetal heartbeat bills. But this use of embryonic pulsing as a term falls in line with larger media efforts to dehumanize the mm-hmm. unborn babies and
right.
sanitize the reality of abortion. And so NPR urged journalists not to use the term unless absolutely necessary in recent guidance published as a reminder
well, of course, it's NPR.
to reporters on its policies for abortion reporting. So obviously they're trying to start getting us mm-hmm. used to this, right?
Right.
So that they can call it one thing while the majority of everybody calls it another
yeah.
thing.
Anyone with a conscience and a brain and understands science is going to call it a heartbeat, but these Nimrods are going to call it pulsing.
Yes.
And
perfect. that the majority of people refer to these laws now as fetal heartbeat laws. And so they're really trying to get people to understand. They recognize what a powerful term that is. And they recognize that when women can see a fetal heartbeat, it transforms them from wanting to just deal with a medical problem to considering themselves as having a life inside of them. When you can see that heartbeat.
They'll do anything.
Yes.
Anything for the escape clause for their conscience. Anything, if they have one still. It's anything they can do to convince themselves that they're not doing something.
Right.
It's amazing to me what they'll
like,
go to.
How do we play this mind trick
right.
and wrap our mind around something? What else do we call it? I mean, it's the ultimate marketing
it
to
is.
Just redefine what is happening in a human body. To
mm-hmm.
call who I want to know who thought this up, because
right.
it's, you
yeah.
know, obviously people sat around and somebody came up with this.
Yeah. But see, I'm not gaining weight. I'm just eating snacks to increase my girth. I mean, we could do this with anything. I mean,
yes.
let's play a game, shall we? I
yes.
mean, let's just make up anything so that it's not what it is. I mean, that's how this is just so sick. It's sick on so many levels because they're trying so hard to do it. That's what it just That's what drives me crazy. It's always some kind of new phraseology they're coming up with.
Well, and it's targeting. They're targeting the people that they know are swayed by heartbeats, that are swayed by... Because now you can put a heartbeat on a YouTube video. Now you can see it in a video or share it phone to phone.
Yeah, that's not a heart. That's just an organ now. Don't call it a heart, right?
It's
Not. I mean, I can just see where they're going. It's just amazing what they're doing with this.
Right. And I guess in medical terminology, it's not considered a fetus until 11 weeks, but the
in
heartbeat.
Medical, yeah. Even though at 22 days, by the time woman's finding out they're pregnant, brain is forming, circulatory system, digestive system, heart is beating, already knows what sex it is, by the time they're even finding out.
Yeah.
So that's,
absolutely. So 6 weeks, they can see that. And that now they want to call it a pulsing. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to fight them for this term of reality.
Meeting them on their ground. On their asinine ground.
Yes.
That's perfect.
Put a stake in the ground for reality. I choose reality.
I don't
reality.
Even know what to say. I don't even know what to say to this. That's how insane they're getting.
Yeah.
And there really has got to be something really wrong with people that strive to do that. That have to do. If you can't stand on what is real to even defend your case and you have to make up new terminology to do it.
Yeah.
What you're standing for isn't right. You know what I mean? It drives me crazy.
They want what they want, and they will do anything to get it and not let anybody stand in the way.
Yeah.
So now more and more people are standing in the way by getting these bills passed.
Right. I debated a guy the other day, a friend of mine, for abortion, and he was actually for abortion. I was obviously against abortion, and I'm against abortion at any stage. And he was talking about hair follicles and cells and how it's just a bunch of cells. And you know, I didn't come from a hair follicle, and I know you didn't. I came from a sperm and an egg, and that's pretty much how it works. Mm-hmm. And so the brain forms and all those things form. It doesn't form from a piece of dandruff. It doesn't form from a hair follicle. It doesn't form from a cell getting scrubbed off your scalp. It comes from, and this is due, you can even go to science for this explanation, but that's how crazy it's getting. You know, it's goo, it's cells, it's nothingness. How far does one have to go to try and make it nothingness?
Yeah.
They're going far.
Well, and they had an excuse before they had ultrasound. They really did, because they didn't know what was going on in there. And then Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who started NARAL, he said, you know, we
lied about it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and yes, that they lied to the media to get all these abortion laws passed. But he said, you know, when we finally put an ultrasound on it and saw what was going on.
Right.
You couldn't deny that it was life. And he became a pro-life activist based on the science.
Yep.
He saw it for himself.
Yeah, and said he lied because they were caught up in the moment. They were caught up in the moment in the 70s. Therefore, why ruin the moment with a bunch of lies or with the truth? Because you don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
You just want to keep it going because they were caught up in a moment.
Yeah. And they were 73. He said they were making huge amounts of money with every abortion. And he said he oversaw 75,000 abortions and personally did about 15,000. So he said by the end of his life, his conscience, he was worried about what he was going to face on the other side. He became a pro-life Catholic. He filmed used footage of the baby in the silent scream and movie, and people just dismissed him and said, well, he's, you know.
Yeah, they dismiss him now that he's against their charge.
They want what they want, and nothing can stand. No person can stand in the way. No science can stand in the way.
What are you going to do with your life? Look at the guy that stood in front of the tanks, Tiananmen Square. Look at this guy who now has to have the anxiety and the shame and the guilt of what he's accomplished in his life.
The accounting. Well,
you know, the song My Way, I was looking at the lyrics, and what are you going to stand for? Who are you? Who are you? And what did your mark on this world become? What did you stand for? Do you have the courage to stand in front of the tank? Do you have the courage to stand and say, this isn't okay? This is murder. Do you have the courage to stand up?
Yeah.
And you know, that is the question we should always be asking ourselves and our children. We talked about yesterday, are you the guardian of this?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just the recipient or the voyeur?
Yeah, I like that, the guardian.
Yeah,
yes.
Are you the guardian? It gives you a whole different sense of responsibility to the actions your life of what you actually stand for and versus what you mean in your heart. That's nice that you mean it in your heart. That's nice that you stand for things in your heart or that you have this private way of thinking about things.
things. But at a certain time, do you display the courage? Do you go out and you do become the guardian of it? That is a big question for people. And I think something we need to be asking our kids and each other and ourselves. What do we stand? Are we that guy that stands in front of those tanks?
Yeah,
I sure hope so.
Well, and we're going to see which journalists are just going to say, no, I'm not going to do this. I was told do it. I am not going to do it. Just like that photographer who said, I'm going to make sure this picture gets out. Just like the spy I talked about who said, I'm going to fight the Nazis and do my part.
Yeah.
And what is the brave thing we are doing to push back.
Yeah. And thank goodness there's redemption. And thank goodness there's all of those things because, you know, no life is beyond redemption. But what I'm talking about is even if it's you're just starting now, right, to finally get this, then what are you going to stand for now?
Yeah.
Are you a beacon of that, a guardian of it, or are we just looking at it and kind of upset about it? I mean, there's such a difference there, right?
Right.
Just being the critic quarterback, which we're all really good at. We become good at it because we've been allowed to become good at it.
Yeah. Using words, but nothing else really, instead of really
stand
taking
up against
a stance.
This new speak. And I think that that's so important. There was an article about all these furious celebrities that wanted the president assaulted and tortured. And I'm thinking, these are kind of despicable people. I mean, I didn't even call for that. And I couldn't stand Obama. And I think he's a traitor to this country. But I still wouldn't have called for that. We have a lot of despicable behavior going on. And we need to stand up for what's right against that and call them out.
And we have peaceful ways of doing that. We don't have to resort to what they had to resort to in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah.
You know, they were going a peaceful route. And look what the government did.
Right.
So we have other options.
And we still have those voices that we have right now that we're able to even do this. Mm-hmm. So we have to, I understand how many freedoms have been lost, but I also understand how many freedoms I have. That's what I try to celebrate or try to at least know that we can get back to, hopefully grabbing some of those freedoms back for ourselves. But looking around and even looking at the headlines today, it's just really on my mind today. What do we stand for and who are we? And we have this just wonderful opportunity as American citizens to really stand and be heard. That's amazing. A lot of countries, they don't get that. And that's why I think, my gosh, we've been given such a gift. We have to use it. And that gift kind of goes unused. So I'm grateful for that gift. Great stuff. Thank you, Susan.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you. Wow. Pulse. That's what our hearts do now. They pulse. Interesting. Wow. Just never goes to amaze me. I mean, real honestly, it always amazes me. Be faithful. Be fearless. See you back here tomorrow with Chris Ann Hall. And, lots to talk about over the dinner table. Hope you're doing that with your family tonight. And we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. If you're a parent and are worried about your child's social and emotional development, you may have asked yourself questions like, am I over-worrying this issue?